Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Heather Stark, your host, and I'm working on a PhD right now, and that's got me in a lather. I'm working on the dissertation, which is the big paper at the end. And I have a background in domestic violence issues and journalism and now psychology. Joining me today is Dr. Sandy Wortley. And Doctor, you're in the East Coast. You're in New York?
No, actually, I'm in Colorado. And please, Heather,
oh, that's
call
right.
Me Sandy.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I got confused because I have so many people from the East Coast who join us on this show. I have Dr. Sandy Wortley with me, and she is in a unique position because the situations that we're going to be talking about today are kind of interesting, and she actually has personal insight into at least one of those situations. Dr. Wortley, could you please tell us about your background? Because I've got to tell you, when I saw your CV, I thought, whoa, we're going to have to take the whole show just to describe your credentials.
Please. Please don't. And again, please call me Sandy. I'm
okay.
I'm very informal, and but thank you for the compliment. Yes, I have devoted my entire professional career, a very long one, I might add, to protecting kids, and specifically to protecting them from sexual abuse. And so most of my work is in the area of prevention of childhood sexual abuse and also sexual exploitation, including like commercial sexual exploitation, the prostitution and child pornography areas.
Oh, wonderful. You have dedicated your life to the issues of children and safety and some pretty hairy issues, which is interesting. Because the horrible, awful, terrible situation that we are going to be talking about today is a six-year-old boy in your neck of the woods who was, I believe, suspended or at least charged with sexually harassing a six-year-old classmate whom he kissed on the cheek during playground.
I am in the meat of it. This occurred in a small city. About 16,000 people live in Canyon City, which is south of Colorado Springs. And this kind of came about in a explosion, I should say, a couple of weeks ago. Shall we talk about some of the details of the case?
Sure. First of all, let me toss out our phone number if you would like to join us in this conversation. And we're not going to be spending the whole entire show on this one case because there are many like this. This phone number to call us is 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. And we'd love to have you call with your stories or your opinions on the situation. Now, Sandy, give us some outline of this situation, this case that's before us.
Yeah, sure, you bet. I got a call on December 9th, Monday, about a case that had occurred in Canyon City, and all I was informed about was that it involved a six-year-old boy, as you mentioned, who had been suspended from school with a charge of sexual harassment. And I was asked to comment on his behavior that resulted in this sexual harassment claim being included in his school record. And the behavior was, all I knew was that he kissed a girl on the cheek. And so as the story unfolded, apparently this boy had, as his mother describes, kind of a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship with this six-year-old girl, a classmate, and he had kissed the girl on her cheek the month before. And then on December 4th, he apparently kissed the same girl on her hand. And the classmates witnessed this and reported it to the teacher. And then it just kind of went up the chain, and the boy was suspended from school and, again, had this sexual harassment put into his school record.
Yeesh.
So is that
Yeesh.
That's horrific,
pretty
precise. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
yeah.
Did he grope her or anything, or?
No. Nothing like that. It was.
Did he whisper inappropriate things in her ear while he was doing a little kiss?
Yeah. Well, you would think, given the outrage that just went viral. This case, this interview with the child was interviewed, and darling
by
little
whom?
Boy.
Who interviewed the child?
A local radio station. And so he was interviewed twice. And what's kind of interesting is that, typically when we have minors who are either perpetrators or victims of crimes, their identities aren't released. But in this case, we know his name, and we know what he looks like, and he was interviewed, and darling little kid, Hunter Yelton, he talks about how, he did something wrong, and he was sent to the office fair and square, and the story just kind of hung on that he was suspended for kissing this girl twice, once on the hand and once on the cheek.
Weeks apart.
Yes.
Two separate incidents, okay.
Yes.
It occurred to me, I mean, I did a little research on this, clearly, and I saw an article or quotes from the mother. I'm piling through papers here, but the mother, when I read what the mother had to say, I thought, because the mother, Hunter Yelton's mother, said that her son and the girl are boyfriend and girlfriend by first grader term.
Yes, right. And the mother during the interview said the same thing. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when I first read that, I thought, but then I thought, most first graders, second graders, I think I saw it in a movie recently where the boy goes to school and he's a little kid, and then he comes home and somebody asks him if he's got a girlfriend yet, and he goes, yep, and we're going to get married, and we're going to, and everybody laughs because it's so cute, But the mother was kind of shocked by it, but I got to tell you, I also read an article that interviewed the mother of the classmate, and she's not so generous. She doesn't see this as so funny.
No, not at all. And I'm sure that's what led the school officials to, take a more serious approach to this.
Yeah.
Because
she said that these incidents, it wasn't just two incidents, it happened over and over and over.
Well, yes, she is, and on her Facebook page, she did state that he has had a history of chasing this little girl, and that the little girl asked him multiple times to stop, and he refused. So, there is a little bit of as is true of every case like this, there's always the other side to it. And I think that's probably what led to the initial outrage, was we didn't have the other side. All we were told is that there was this kissing involved, and that kind of reporting, of course, got very sensationalized, and the public only had that information. So when the mother of a little girl came out and said that there had been repeated incidents where, you know, he didn't give any warning and he would sneak up on her and do this kiss and he had no consequences for his actions. And so it sounded like, yeah, there may be a little bit of more to the story than what the initial news report gave us.
Yeah, and of course that wouldn't be an unusual situation with the media. You know, they pick a couple of points and, you know, usually disregard the rest.
But why do you think, why would the public react like this? I mean, this thing went viral. It was picked up internationally. It was in Croatia. And the comments, even locally, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of comments about this story from parents, from people who, you know, had this happen to them when they were kids in schools, and there's just this sense of outrage.
But the outrage isn't over the kiss. The outrage is over how the school handled it.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks to, you know, maybe parents are getting kind of fed up with schools.
Well, that whole zero tolerance
thing. Yeah, this zero tolerance that so many schools seem to be taking. And in this case, I mean, this is a perfect example of, you know, the school, of course, as all schools that receive federal funding for Title IX, this school receives federal funding and must follow the policies and guidelines under Title IX, protecting all
kids. So does Title
IX
dictate this kind of a response to something like that?
Well, it depends on how broadly you read the guidance for Title IX. As I'm sure you're aware, Title IX, of course, is, you know, the policy that sets out that it makes it a federal law that prohibits sex discrimination in educational institutions. Any school, any educational institution that receives federal financial assistance must abide by the Title IX. And that Title IX, of course, prohibits any number of forms of sex discrimination in schools, including sexual harassment. And so the school has, obviously, a policy, as all schools must do, on sexual discrimination and harassment. And although this policy, you know, they deferred to their policy, and in particular, one of the definitions of sexual harassment that they said little Hunter was guilty of was unwelcome touching.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, they took that very narrow definition of sexual harassment and applied it wrongly in this case.
Okay.
So,
now,
go ahead.
Okay. Now, according to Hunter's own mother, she said that they've had problems with Hunter's actions before, and he was placed on in-school suspension once, given a 2-day suspension once. Oh, I guess that was for this particular incident. So is this a pattern of behavior with this boy? And, you know, I mean, or is this just an isolated incident? What's the situation there?
Well, and those are exactly the kinds of questions that need to be asked any time we hear about these cases. Because it just seems that the general public isn't real aware of how important those elements that you just mentioned are. that for sexual harassment to occur, there has to be a pattern of and of serious actions, not just, you know, an isolated incident that was not, you know, considered serious, that is really not even what I would call sexual. I would label what he did as, you know, public display of affection. But it's
six years old,
he's
already got a
PDA. Yes, exactly, right. Well, and you know, that's what he committed. That's his offense, is that he was told, apparently, not to kiss, at least the cheek, and, you know, what six-year-old is going to take that rule and say, well, okay, if I can't kiss her cheek, then I guess I'll kiss her hand, you know? I mean, I'm not breaking that rule, right?
Well, if we were in a different century, he'd be considered very gallant.
And he would, yes, absolutely. But, you know, what we don't have is that understanding of how important it is that, you know, not only does it have to be of a sexual nature, the behavior has to be of a sexual nature, but it's got to be severe, it's got to be pervasive, and it's got to be offensive. Those are the definitions of unwanted sexual behavior that creates a hostile environment in the school. And so when that kind of environment exists, of course, absolutely we need protection, because kids can't learn when they're being a victim of severe, pervasive, and offensive behaviors coming from somebody else. And so, you know, we have to do everything that we can to make sure it's not a hostile learning environment, that it's a safe and enriching learning environment for kids. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, if his actions had fit those criteria of being severe, pervasive, and offensive, then absolutely the school did the right thing.
Yeah.
If that was the case, it wasn't reported. Exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's interesting, too, because, you know, we were talking off the air about, well, why when they report this kind of a thing, do they not include everything? And I think that might be part of the reason. I mean, it was reported as sexual harassment. I always thought harassment was, as you mentioned earlier, a pattern, not just a one-time occurrence,
yes.
But a right. Harassment means over and over and over, doesn't it?
Exactly, right. Not an isolated incident. Right.
Yeah, but I did do a little research on sexual harassment, and I never saw that anywhere. In popular press, sexual harassment has been described as any unwanted sexual attention that a woman experiences. And nothing said about repetition or pattern or anything. So I'm wondering if some of the brouhaha is because we don't really understand what harassment is.
That's it. I totally agree. And the guidelines do say that a pattern doesn't have to be there if the behavior is so serious. Like,
yeah.
For example, you know, there may not be a pattern, but then a teacher rapes a student. That's a
yes.
One-time incident of very serious assault. So the pattern occurs when they're less serious.
Okay. When you were asking, we were talking actually about, you know, what is the definition of a six-year-old, and can a six-year-old really be sexual? I mean, I'm assuming that there has that this is a hesitate to use the word normal, but a child with reasonable and common life experiences at this point, not children who have perhaps been sexually assaulted themselves. But can a child that is just a regular kid at 6 years old be capable of sexual acts?
Well,
can we interpret a kiss on the cheek as a sexual act?
When I was asked during my interview if this was normal behavior, I replied, absolutely. That's not considered a red flag or a suspicious kind of behavior. It's typical of children of that age. And so in by itself, kissing on the cheek, kissing on the hand is perfectly normal.
Yeah. Well, you often see children that age holding hands and, you know.
Yes, right.
Yeah, I mean, the children of that age do a lot of it, I'm assuming, because they usually learn this at home. This is loving behavior.
Yes, and that's actually some of the outrage, is that parents thought, well, what kind of message is that given to my child to hear that they can get in trouble for showing affection? And, you know, I think it provides a great learning opportunity for parents to talk with their kids about, appropriate places to show affection. You know, what he did, the kiss on the cheek or the kiss on the hand, that's perfectly normal, but apparently it wasn't normal in this school setting, or at least it was viewed negatively in this school setting. So, you know, hopefully that child and all the kids in that classroom and in that school will have discussions at home about, okay, maybe I shouldn't be kissing in school,
yeah.
But certainly, you know, I can be affectionate at home or, you know, in places where it's allowed. So it had the potential of being a teachable moment, but unfortunately, I think what a lot of people heard was that this was sexual.
Yeah.
And that created even more panic, I think,
yes.
In parents.
I told you, doing my research, I ran across an article that someone said that it's not, you know, sexual assault from a six-year-old is just something that you can't even comprehend. It just doesn't happen. And, in fact, in Wisconsin right now, there's a case going on with another six-year-old. He was accused of first-degree sexual assault of a child for playing doctor, and they've got that in quotes, with a five-year-old girl in September. And I never had that experience of playing doctor, but I know a lot of people have, and they laugh about it, and it's pretty much considered a standard
like
behavior.
Like a rite of passage.
So, I mean, we always laugh about the playing doctor and steer children in another direction if they're doing that. But the case brings up the question, can a six-year-old commit sexual assault?
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying in Wisconsin that this is actually new legal ground, a child's act can be considered criminal, behavior involves some behavior that experts say is pretty normal for kids that age.
Yes. A lot of my research actually is on what is developmentally appropriate or typical of children, male and female, at different ages. And certainly for that age range, you bet that, you show me yours, I'll show you mine, or playing doctor, nurse. Those are such common behaviors and absolutely are not at all indicators of sexual behavior problems in kids. Now, as you get older and there's more coercion involved, either emotional or physical coercion, then you bet, then that crosses that line into sexual assault, but not at 5- and 6-year-olds. And what the kids are saying is, you know, I'm curious. what does it mean to be a boy and what does it mean to be a girl? And let's look at them, you know. Let's look at our differences, and those are just very, very normal behaviors. But what
it reminds
Heather,
me of, if I can interrupt for just a second, it reminds me of an old joke from years ago. But it shows the two little kids, you know, each pulling their pants out a little bit so they can take a view, and the girl looks at the boy and says, "Oh, so that's why you make more money than I do."
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must
well,
be key to it.
But you know, all joking aside, it also these kinds of cases also show how repressive we still are about sexuality, that we're pathologizing normal sexual behavior. And instead of, you know, recognizing that this is healthy, and here's our responsibility as adults is, you know, take that behavior and turn it into a learning opportunity for those kids. Now's the time when they're curious, and now's the time to bring out, you know, the books about what's it like to be a boy and what's it like to be a girl and how are we different and how are we special and blah, blah, blah. But instead, now we're pathologizing it.
So I think back to when my son was in third grade and the teacher had no children of her own, and I think it was her first or second year teaching. So she was kind of inexperienced. And the boys were all drawing pictures with their red markers, drops of blood and stuff on these pictures. And the teacher was horrified by this, and so she took away all their red markers. And then it took them about 20 minutes to figure out that aliens have green blood, so pretty soon they were drawing pictures of the aliens with the green blood. And I thought, okay, so now are we going to take away the green markers? Are we going to reduce these boys to, you know, drawing in black and white? Or, you know, and I thought it was...
I'm sure that's what a lot of teachers would like to do, is just, you know, duct tape their hands together.
Well, as a former teacher, it would be a very good solution for the teacher. Yeah, duct tape them to the chair in the morning, duct tape them, yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly, right. But, you know, I'm on this, you know, bandwagon about, and in fact I do a lot of continuing education workshops for teachers, just help, especially early ed teachers, just helping them to understand and appreciate what changes the kids are going through in their understanding about their bodies and how to, you know, how to handle sexual behaviors in the classroom. And, you know, those early years are when you're really going to see the overt sexual behaviors, the kissing, you know, the self-stimulation, the doctor games in the bathroom. That's when you're going to see it. It's as they get older, in, you know, 8, 9 years old, they're less overt. They figured out, oh, this stuff we can't do in public. But it continues, obviously, just underground. And
they're smart enough to know they can't just be open about it.
Right.
Well,
and
there
and
are
that's
cases.
Where these cases of these six-year-olds and five-year-olds are coming out, is that the same kinds of norms, if you will, that we're applying to the older kids about their behavior, their sexual behavior in particular, they're being now, you know, dropped down lower and lower and lower in at an age where it's totally inappropriate to have those kinds of expectations on kids.
I think that we do have high expectations for children. We kind of see them as a society. We kind of see them as miniature people. You know, I mean, I've heard so many people talking about, well, my two-year-old bit another two-year-old, so we sat down and talked about it. Really? A two-year-old? How... I would love to have heard that conversation, you know, and
how's
have
that
some
working
sort of,
for you?
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah, right.
You know, or one mother I remember there was a hitting incident with 2-year-olds, and so she said that she sat her child down, 2-year-old, and explained that hitting is never okay unless somebody hits you first. And I'm thinking, yeah, that 2-year-old brain can absorb that. You know.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, but you're absolutely right. And I think we're doing the same thing. We're thinking of them as miniature adults, and so when we see them kissing or playing doctor, we're applying adult criminal offenses or interpreting those behaviors as if they were adult behaviors, and we're assuming that they have the mentality to plan, to be able to emotionally manipulate someone, to be able to coerce someone into doing that, instead of just, this is a normal reaction, you know? There's no planning involved. They just
this isn't John Smith
curious.
Leaning over the boardroom table and pecking Susie Smith on the cheek.
There you go.
These are children.
Yes.
Yeah. And
but
I would think
right.
that
we're,
indicates a rather healthy, in my view, I would think, oh, well, that's pretty healthy. You know, that means that this kid is growing up in a loving family. I didn't see it as, oh, sexual. This is something sexual. I just saw it as, oh, nice, this kid clearly has grown up with some affection in his life, and there are a lot of kids who don't grow up with affection in their lives, and so they can't model that.
But then a school can, out of concern about being sued, for example, there have been many school systems that have been taken, you know, to civil court about not recognizing and investigating cases of sexual harassment. So a knee-jerk reaction, I think, is, oh, if this is sexual in nature and it's repeated, we now have, in our case, 2 times, that it therefore constitutes sexual harassment. And according to Title IX, we must investigate. And if we don't, then we could be, you know, accused of being negligent and be liable. So, again, it's when you follow a policy to the letter without really thinking about the consequences to all parties involved. I mean, we now have, you know, both the little girl, we now have her identity, we have this little boy, and we have the identities of both mothers. This has just, you know, been so blown out of proportion that you have to wonder, did they really think through the consequences of placing a sexual harassment offense in this kid's school record?
I just can't imagine. Well, again, they said that it will remain on his school record as long as he's in Canyon. Is it Canyon City?
Canyon City,
as long as he's in Canyon City schools, but then once he leaves, it's going to be gone. But I read another story where some woman found out her son was not getting accepted to college, and she thought he has great point average, So she requested copies of his school record, and here there was an incident when he was also about 6 or 7 that they put on his record. She made a fuss, and so they said they were going to remove it from his record, but they never did. And so all of these applications that he was sending to school, and they were accessing his school record, you know, the famous permanent record, it indicated this incident that he'd had in elementary school and that carried all the way up through high school. So that's kind of scary.
Yeah, that's sad. And in fact, I had a mother call me and share a very similar situation where it was supposed to have been removed and it wasn't, and it did go on to haunt her son. So, parents are becoming more aware of that paper trail and that it can keep their child from, you know, getting into college, getting a job, blah, blah, blah. There's some argument, though, that, you know, very few college admissions boards will actually go back and look at kindergarten records or first grade records. They're more interested in high school grades. But nevertheless, why take a chance? So therein is, you know, this fear of having this on your record that could prohibit you from getting into, you know, either a job or into college. So it cannot be taken lightly. Absolutely not. Not an accusation that serious.
Well, again, this is not, you know, we're talking particularly about this case in Colorado. We were also mentioning the case in Wisconsin, but there's also a case going on right now where a six-year-old is accused of sexual assault because of at least what his father said was a game of tag on the playground. Apparently, his son and the other kid were playing tag, a group of kids, and according to the father, his son was accused of brushing his best friend's leg or groin while the two were playing on the playground. And the father, of course, says that it's just an overreaction, that they were playing, you know, hands go places. It's, you know, it's like keep away or something, you know. I mean, hands, you know, and apparently there was no accusation that the boy's hands lingered or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the six-year-old now has a sexual harassment claim that the family is facing. Another situation is a 9-year-old, and this one, do I have a state? This came from HuffPost, so I'm not sure what state that is in, but a 9-year-old girl told another student that her teacher was cute. Or it was
okay.
A male student. A 9-year-old told another student that the teacher was cute. School officials heard about it and put him on a 2-day suspension for sexual harassment. And again, the mother says it's not like he went up to the woman and tried to grab her or touch her in a sexual way. Why would he be suspended for 2 days?
You're just, like, amazed at the apparent lack of common sense and judgment.
Well, one of the bloggers that I found that I think was your case in Colorado said, political correctness run amok once again. Oh, the shame of it. A six-year-old kisses a girl's hand. Time for the parents to yank their kids out of the public schools. There's no sign of intelligent life there. And then another one said, if he'd kissed another boy, it probably would have been seen as diversity.
Yeah, that's come up a lot in the comments. But, you know, if it's truly sexual harassment, of course, it doesn't matter, the genders. But it could be boy to boy, it could be girl to girl, it could be, you know, opposite genders. But it's still coming down to just lack of common sense that they're taking, the schools are taking these isolated, simple acts of what I think most parents would call just childish behavior or immature conduct and just blowing them out, being politically correct, but unfortunately doing a lot of damage. Unless they can turn it around and provide to everybody, teachers, the parents, the kids, more awareness about what sexual harassment is and go beyond, especially at young ages, you don't talk in terms of sexual or harassment. I mean, those are way too abstract terms for young children to understand. But, you know, simple concepts like, you know, respecting each other's space, you know, or boundaries, you know, respecting your own boundaries.
And that's not a process that you just explain to a child and the next day he's got it. It's a repetition. It's a learning process.
Right.
It's just, you know, I mean, like we were saying before, it's like parents and administrators expect these children to be miniature adults and not in a developmental phase. You know, you don't tell a six-year-old something once and, boy, he's got it. You have to tell him over and over. I mean, look at crossing the street. I was reading a study that you really cannot trust a child to consistently look both ways before crossing the street until he's 12.
Later than that.
That's true. But we assume how many 5- and 6-year-olds cross streets alone, you know. We just put all of this, you know, not that these children are stupid, it's just that they're in a process that they have to process this stuff. And sometimes over and over, I mean, look how long it takes some of us to learn a computer, you know. You have to do it over and over before
rules for crossing the street, those are pretty black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So if it takes kids that long to understand a very concrete rule, you stop, you look both ways, and then you cross. Okay, that's pretty concrete. Now, let's take that, and now we're expecting these kids at same ages to be able to understand sexual harassment? When adults don't even understand it. I think pretty much everybody is pretty clear on sexual harassment in the workplace. You know, we all get that. When your supervisor has power over you, it becomes very difficult to refuse, you know, sexual advances or sexual pressure or sexual harassment, right? When you don't have much power and your supervisor or person who has power over you has all that power, then we get that.
Yes.
But it's not so clear, especially in student-to-student harassment. What does that mean? What does that look like? And the schools are interpreting it very narrowly, and if it's on their list, like in this Canyon City case, where touching another kid's body constitutes sexual harassment, then boy, that's it. But we really haven't figured out a way to help schools understand what it is. And
you think that is because of liability issues, that they want to make sure that...
I do believe that that is what is prompting, in this case, or I don't know that it's happened in this case, but I think in general that, that schools are, concerned about liability, and that, they do have to follow the guidelines, even though they really went beyond it. But, they could get in serious trouble, including losing their federal assistance.
And I think a lot of these cases are, they're not clear-cut. I'm thinking of a case where the Atlanta high school student, he was suspended for a year because he hugged his teacher. It was a male student, a female teacher. He was 17, and he hugged his teacher during a pep rally. He was suspended for an entire year, and he was an athlete, which, of course, makes a big difference to a lot of people. And the school withheld a lot of comments. They said because of legal things they couldn't talk a lot. But the more you peer into this, apparently this has happened in the past with hugging, no other behavior, that this boy likes to hug people. And there are, I've met people like that who just, oh, hi, I just met you, hug, But I've never seen it as a particularly sexual thing. So I don't know, but, there is some sort of history there. He has been apparently told to stop the hugging, But he hasn't, and it culminated when he hugged his teacher a couple weeks ago,
right.
And he got a year suspension. So that's a little iffier, I think. The child is older. He's a 17-year-old.
Right.
He was warned
mm-hmm.
before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That one requires a lot of interpretation, I think. And in this case,
And in this case, it's the teacher who is making the claim.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Again, if you look at, you know, could this situation have created a hostile environment? Absolutely, for that teacher. If this is a repetitive behavior and there's suggestion that it's more than just a hug, that there may have been some touching of her neck, kissing of her neck, that if there's more of a sexual nature and it's a repetitive behavior and that teacher feels harassed, in other words, that she feels frightened and that her environment is now a hostile working environment because of this boy's behavior. So here we have clearly a whole different scenario in that we have evidence of this older boy's repetitive behavior, having gotten in trouble for it before, having been told not to do it, and also an adult who is feeling that it has created a hostile environment and is claiming that that this boy sexually harassed her. So it's a whole different, in my opinion, it's certainly a very different animal. And
mm-hmm.
I do think, you know, that the school's decision makes sense. Again, following from Title IX and, you know, what the guidance is as far as sexual harassment, but what's interesting is there's a petition that is out trying to claim that this punishment does not fit the violation. They're trying to overturn this boy's punishment. And there's a change.org petition out. So here we have the public now saying, no, that's not sexual harassment. And this kid should not be, you know, it's always tough when you have
especially with the older kids that are looking toward their futures, you know, and that permanent
exactly,
record.
Exactly, right.
Yeah,
right,
plus
right,
the athletics.
Right.
Nobody wants to see a successful high
Ooh.
School athlete that might have a future in athletics prevented
yeah.
from pursuing that. But another case that is not with children, but it seems to be in the same vein as, I don't know if you're keeping up with the news, but there have been protests in Italy, a lot of protests. And have you ever seen the riot police that go out and they have those big plastic things, they almost look like welder's helmets in
yes,
front of their
uh-huh.
faces?
Yeah.
They're kind of clear plastic, and they probably stick out a good 4 to 6 inches away from the front of the face. And a 20-year-old female protester in Italy walked over to one of the riot police guys that was wearing one of these helmets and kissed him on the plastic. Just
oh, I saw that.
A little,
I saw
a little
that
kiss on the
photograph.
Plastic.
Yes.
Yes, and I'll tell you, you look at that photograph, and the guy wearing the helmet looks like he's a little tickled by the whole thing. but there's no, I mean, she's a good 6 inches away from him. She's been charged with sexual assault because of that. The police that have charged her, I mean, they're really ticked off, apparently. They could consider it a real assault, and they said, you know, that they considered it a real affront, you know, a real offense, and that if it had been a man doing that to a woman, nobody would have a problem calling it a sexual assault.
Hmm.
So here we go with that.
That
standard again, you know. I mean, are some of these things retaliation? Are some of them self-protection? Are some, you know, what's going on here? I mean, I remember the day when, you know, there was a famous photograph of a girl sticking a daisy in a gun barrel, you know, for protesting a war. And everybody thought that was wonderful. And I think this, from reading the story, this young woman thought she was doing something similar, you know, showing peace and affection. And but, I mean, can it be sexual assault if you don't even touch the guy? I don't know.
Well, look what a kiss has turned into. If you're a six-year-old boy in Canyon City, it's called sexual harassment. If you're this protester in Italy, it's called sexual assault. Now, once again, we don't have all the details, right?
Yep.
All we know is that there's a photo of her kissing this policeman, and that's all we have. But, wow, what's happened that a simple kiss has become, just, you know, taken on so many negative connotations.
Yes. And, I mean, we're not talking sort of, you know, wild, passionate kissing. We're talking pecs, you know. I mean, I don't know. I pulled a comment from someone talking about the six-year-old, and this commenter said, something is wrong with this picture. The school administrators are professionals trained to deal with these situations. By the parents ignoring their expert advice, are the parents now unsuspectedly raising a potential sex predator? The child should be taken to mandated counseling and try to determine where this inappropriate conduct stems. Was it something that was done to him? Is he just responding based upon past experience? These questions need answers. The school was much too quick to acquiesce in this situation, in other words, removing the sexual harassment from his record. The threat of potential lawsuits is a surefire way of covering up. The police should reopen the investigation and look into this child's background. You know, I have...
Okay. Well...
You know, keyword child, you know. and
that,
I think that if you had a child, a six-year-old child, who doesn't express affection, I would be concerned that this child is growing up in an environment where he's not getting enough affection in his life to provide him with the stability he needs to grow up.
Here again is an opportunity to open up that dialogue about, okay, we have a behavior. If you want to call it a sexual behavior, fine, of kissing. There's no indication that it's any further than that. And it's not, we're not talking about French kissing. We're not talking about a more adult form of kissing. It's a peck on the cheek. Now, to take that behavior and to be concerned that this child is a potential sexual predator and also... and or that the child is being sexually victimized, that's really stretching it. Now, I can tell you many other cases of older children who have exhibited very serious kinds of sexual behaviors toward their peers in...
and it's not unusual for a child who has been abused to exhibit those behaviors. I mean, that's one
red flags.
You know, I mean,
that,
when you see a child acting out sexually, then you do suspect.
Right.
But,
yes, exactly. So that kind of concern that was expressed in that comment is certainly, you know, I certainly appreciate that concern and looking at that behavior through that set of glasses, but it's clearly inappropriate to do it in this particular case. Now, there are other cases where absolutely, you know, if a school has a report of older children where one is coercing the other child to go along with more serious kinds of sexual behaviors, ones that you would expect only of, you know, maybe adult behaviors, where there's definitely this child has learned this either by having it done to him or her, or has seen it maybe in a home that's very sexualized, then yeah, the school absolutely needs to intervene, not so much to accuse the child of being of sexual harassment, but to get that child help. because that child probably is a victim of some sort of sexualized environment or sexual behavior or a sexual abuse, and that child needs to be seen as a victim, not as a perpetrator.
Exactly. And again, the behavior exhibited is very clearly sexualized behavior. In
right, in the older children cases, absolutely, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah.
There's no
yeah.
question that that is sexual behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
But kissing on the cheek should not have been defined as sexual behavior.
Yeah. It's just a crazy situation, I think. And, you know, part of me empathizes with the school because they do have legal restrictions. A lot of people, you know, if you'd make it an individual assessment of each child, which would be preferable, then you're accused of not being fair. You know, you're not applying the same standards to everyone. I understand why they moved to a zero-tolerance thing. Then the decision is taken out of their hands, and supposedly they have less liability. But it's so unrealistic to think that you can apply an adult standard,
yeah.
And apply it to every single situation that will occur with the hundreds of people that go to a school every day. And in some cases, thousands.
Yes.
It's just mind-boggling. And part of me thinks, you know, if I saw this little six-year-old kissing a girl's hand on the playground, it would not even cross my mind that it's inappropriate. It wouldn't even cross my mind. Now, maybe if you threw her to the ground, you know, then okay.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, but just sitting next to each other and he takes your hand, and I thought that was sweet. So am I a pervert?
I don't know, Heather. Are you a pervert?
a perv. So, you know, I don't know. It's like the common sense has flown away. It's flown out the window.
And
of course,
maybe just being politically correct is the way to go. And unfortunately, not taking into account what's really in the best interest of these children. And that's really at the heart of this story, is there were a lot of decisions made by adults that did not really protect those kids' best interests. And that's where we have to, you know, stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. Was this story getting out into the public, was that really in the kids' best interests? And I think not.
No.
On the other hand, the school probably would not have changed their decision and eliminated that from his record had there not been such outcry from social media. So it's a double-edged sword. It's knowing about it and being able to comment on it and having the pressure put on the school administrators to do something about this situation, I think, you know, is good, but still at what cost to the kids? And that's always my concern, is are we really, really doing what's in the best interest of these kids?
Well, and another question that we haven't really addressed, but I think it goes without saying, is this supposed victim traumatized? Has there been some disruption to her life because of this outside of the media? Has this disruption occurred in her life, or has she been any kind of trauma in her life because of what the little boy did?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we really don't know. According to the mother's report, the child was upset by the teasing and by the roughhousing that was happening with the boys, plural. More boys were involved. And, you know, that would certainly have been entered into the school's decision about placing such a serious offense in this boy's record, is that there should have been, a hostile environment. Again, that's what sexual harassment is all about, is that somebody's actions creates a hostile environment, and in serious cases of sexual harassment, kids they don't want to go to school anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because
and we're,
when
yeah,
they do
and we're
go
talking
to
Vincent here. Well,
yeah,
Sandy,
thank you
so much
for
adding insight to this. We're just about out of time, and one of the things that I do to try and wrap up our show every week is to come up with a quote. And this quote, you'll be surprised, is not from Gandhi, or it is from Kathy Lee Gifford. And she said, sexual harassment is complex, subtle, and highly subjective. And on that, I want to thank you, Sandy. Please join us next week, and we will do more of Three Women, Three Ways.
Thank you, Heather. It's been my pleasure.